All right, I'm sorry to cut that break short. Obviously, everyone is glad to see everyone else. So I maybe we should have said, let's all get here at 6:30 or something. Visit some more. Look at lesson two. That will be on page four. I mentioned I kind of finally got to the point that what we're saying here is what elders do finally, ultimately, is about saving souls. And so really what they are is sheep shepherds. You see the difference between the flock collective word and the sheep shepherding word. And so what I'd like you all to do is I would like to form some elderships here, and let's deal with a particular sheep. And so maybe groups, I think eldership size of four, but you can't serve with members of your own family. You'll need to go find another eldership to be a part of. How quickly can you form yourself in groups of four? Just look across the table. Go pick a group. Come on, I'll help you go find a group. Go work with Joe. Joe works over there. Joe, these two elders need a home here. So you're all appointed elders for a few minutes here. Yeah, yes, meet with these guys there. All right. That's okay. That'll be all right. No, you can. All right. Chips of three. That'll be okay. All right. Here we are. That's what I didn't. That's what I did. I unplugged this. Okay, are you ready? So let's say your church is say 100 people, 120 people, something like that. You're in a community where there's some other churches that, you know, maybe have some practices we wouldn't necessarily think are scriptural, but not too wild or anything. But this is a situation that's come up. You're in your elder meeting now, and this is the, and I'd like you to address this. We need to come up with an answer to this, because we said, right, that our role now is taking care of sheep. That's the primary thing. So if there's an issue comes up with the sheep, wouldn't that be our priority? Like over the color of the carpet or some other issue, okay? Clearos, that's the way you say her name. You need to practice that Clearos, right? I think is the way. Became a member of your church about a year ago, coming from an institutional church nearby. Her attendance has been mediocre, and she has had very little involvement in church activities or interaction with the elders, except twice when she got behind on her rent and car payment. Okay? When you have made efforts to talk to her at the worship services, you find she has complaints about the way things are run. Sermons are too long. Class segments are too short. There are not enough attention to singles, too little parking, wild kids after church, and so on. She comes late and leaves quickly, talking only occasionally with a couple of other singles who are about her age. Recently, you have heard from one of them that Clearos is thinking about, quote, transferring her membership to another church because of, quote, the poor leadership and, quote, some cold treatment she's received, which she strongly suspects is racially motivated. All right? Over to you. Solve this problem, please. Okay? All right. So to make this easier for you, I've given you some choices, all right? So before you dive in, here are some choices that you can take that might be helpful. They might not be helpful, but, you know, something to consider. Number one, you could just do nothing and see what Clearos decides to do about her membership. Is that an option? Okay. Have a discussion with Clearos about the advantages of your church over others in the area. That might be something. You can choose more than one if you like all these, right? So, you could meet with Clearos and her friends and discuss the reasons behind the way we do things. Why we have wild kids on purpose or something. You could ask for details from her on the cold treatment and address it with those involved. Right? You could encourage Clearos to confront those who have treated her poorly, based on Matthew 18, verse 15. Y'all know that passage, right? Often called. Encourage the other singles to get to know Clearos better and have more social interaction. This is my favorite. Instruct the evangelist to preach a series of sermons on institutionalism and racism. Make an announcement to parents about controlling the behavior of their children. Or something else. Okay, go to it. Let's hear. So the most unrealistic thing about this whole exercise is there's a time limit. Now, I think so. I wish in many of our elders' meetings someone had just said, you have 2 minutes and then you're done. Because is it that late? You know, and so, but that's kind of the way these things work. But I do want to step back a little bit before we get into the details of the thing. And I want you to think about what you just experienced. You had more than one person thinking about the same problem. Did different points of view come forward? Things that you might not have thought of that somebody else did. Different personalities exposed. Is it possible that in the group maybe somebody didn't say much at all and somebody else had more to say, either based on their experience or their personality? Never know, but right? Does that happen? Now, here's another question. I've thought about this sometimes. Is this the most efficient way to decide something? Efficient, I mean quickest. I mean by that, like get it, decisions per second. Is it, you know, was this the... In fact, would you characterize this as a pretty inefficient way of deciding something? Okay, so a couple of points I'll make about that. One is, I always felt under pressure, maybe I shouldn't, but I think there was good reason, that the elders were slowing everything down. You ever had that feeling? You ever had that feeling? Now, some of that's probably well-deserved, but a lot of it was not quite that. It was that there's hard things, and there are differences of opinion that it really need to be worked through in the elders. Do y'all see that? I think we should respect that. And the fact that it's not all transparent, and you don't know what, that is probably for the good of the flock as well. There are difficult, underbelly-type things that elders unfortunately have to deal with. I've often had this thought, too, that the fact the elders have to know a bunch of details and the members don't is a huge blessing to the rest of the church. Absolutely a huge blessing. More to do with personal things, but in general, it's just, I think in some cases, you know, it's a really almost a test of faith to be able to kind of deal with some of these things and say, I can't believe God would let this happen or this person would do that, and yet I still have to do the right thing. But anyway, I'm a little bit off topic. But do you see an advantage, though, of having a plurality of men, though, working in this very inefficient way in a difficult issue? I mean, is there a real good answer to this problem y'all are working on that you can think of? There may be a best answer. I don't know. The young guys are saying, yeah, it's optimistic. Yeah, I know exactly what to do. We'll solve it. Is this going to be difficult? I mean, you can... Okay, we'll deal with the issue now. I just wanted to step back and make a point that an eldership is a group decision-making process. It's not efficient, but it's extremely valuable, and it is God's plan. And I think you can see some wisdom in it after you've been at it for a while, things you didn't think of at all. And I would say to any elders that are here that there ought to be an open environment where if someone hasn't said something in the course of that discussion, they ought to be forced to say what they think. And there ought to be a freedom of expression where I can come up with the dumbest, wildest idea and throw it out without any fear at all. And even say, this is a really dumb idea, but maybe y'all can make something better out of it. You know what I mean? There's got to be that trust, openness to just try anything. What is this? Would this be scriptural or not? And so everybody, you know, starts to think about that. And it makes it very inefficient, but I think it's God's plan. And maybe you have to get older before you get used to deciding things that way. I don't know, but that's part of it. Help me with this. You know, I don't know if you got the impression this was just a multiple choice question. It wasn't. But in fact, I hope you talked about some of these. Let's talk about a few. What about number A? Is there something tempting about number A? Boy, yeah. In terms of like right today, it's like the easiest, isn't it? Doing nothing is always the easiest option. What's the problem with the A? All right. So, yes, the problem is it's not right. The problem is it is a problem. But what's the problem with A? What? Yeah. Okay, it'll get worse somehow. How about it get worse? Yes.
She might just fall away from the Lord altogether.
Okay. Sorry.
Possibly with all her complaints, going to end up affecting other people in the congregation.
Okay. Yeah, so one of the questions, I'll go ahead and cover it now, is does this spill over into a flock shepherding issue of sorts with regard to the unity and all that? Yeah. And is there precedent going to be set whatever you do here? You know what I mean? In other words, there may be some members, maybe not quite as much on the verge, but they're weak or they're worried about racism. I don't know what it is, but the way I handle this is going to be visible. Even if I do nothing, that's visible, right? It's a precedent in some way. Yes.
Doing that from also further deep in her negative views of the leadership of the congregation.
Could be. And by the way, we do not want anybody taking criticisms against our church and how we do things, right? Would that be the elder's view? Now, I said a while ago how terrible that was to do, but is it the elder's job to go and hammer somebody who looks like they're disrespecting them? You know what I mean? So you got to think that through. But it could be that the murmuring could spread. Maybe not. Maybe that's a concern. One of the questions I have about 10 or 12 questions I don't know the answer to, but at what point do elders need to be defensive about what they have decided? And I don't know the answer. I'm sure it depends and depends. It depends. But still, I think there's probably less of that ought to be the case than more. I'm not defensive. I did the best I could. These were my thinking about it. If you got better ideas, please talk to us. I don't. And no, there's no sense of defensiveness about that. Yes, yes.
Doing number 8 would show a lack of concern for that particular member, and that could be even extended to favoritism.
Sure, it's a precedent. We're sending a message by action, or it's a decision one way or the other. And let me ask you this. Where do you think she will go if she, quote, transfers her membership, which is a kind of a denominational term, really? I mean, you know what I mean? What's that? And then what are you going
to
do?
Right.
So what is the policy of the elders about members who just leave and go to the Buddhists or the Baptists? I don't. You know what I mean? What is your policy on that? What is the practice where a member leaves and they're not a member anymore, so you can't withdraw from me? Right? So what do you do in that case? It's a flock shepherding issue. Yeah.
So
whatever you do, it's right. Yes. Yep.
Study is possible, or preachers don't want any in the blood. Whatever their decision is, whatever evidence they might be able to communicate in the whole congregation, for a few reasons. One is to know the elders tried.
That's to his point, that there was some effort made. So this is a parenthesis, and that is, I think one of the questions that you have to kind of establish, I believe you have to establish a policy and a precedent so you can be consistent, kind of your point. When a member does go to a church and it is known by the group to be an unsound group and their soul's in jeopardy in making that move, I think there is some action that needs to be taken for the good of the flock. What that exactly is might be open to some judgment, but you know there's some Bible precedent. I think you should go find it. And the elders need to think that through, remembering that you're establishing a precedent. I keep saying that, don't I? But I think at this point about, well, I'm not going to say close parenthesis. So I don't know what the answer to that part is. But let's go ahead. So what's going to happen is if you don't do anything, it's likely to get worse. It just generates other hard questions, other bad results that you're, you know, you might think at first, yeah, she just goes somewhere else. That's one less problem on her hands. We'll talk more about that in a minute. You could talk to her about the advantage of your church over others. What did you think of that one? Okay. There might be some version of that where she could get some teaching about the proper scriptural way of worshiping, that might be. Meet with her friends, and they could try to work things out, or just to be defensive about the church. That's probably a bad thing. What's going to happen if you... What do you think her personality is, just judging from this case here? What's her personality? Is she outgoing party animal or what? Seems like an introvert, really, in some ways. Leaves early, has established few connections in the church. We tend to blame members a lot of time for that. Oh, they, you know, they claim that nobody speaks to them and they didn't speak to anybody. Okay. Right? I mean, let's take that on. That's their personality. Let's do what we can. Let's do what our part is and not the other way around. But so we can say, well, she leaves early, but okay, so what's going to happen given this personality? We're speculating a little. That you you confront her and say, you know what? You need to go and confront those people who treated you badly. You need to go address that yourself because that's what Matthew 18 says. What about that as a plan? Sounds scriptural to me. I can think of maybe variants there, but I'm afraid that this direct confrontation, first of all, about her responsibility to go and correct members in the church is probably not going to... Even that discussion is going to be a strain, not much more the other one. Yeah, somebody, yeah.
I was going to say, this personality, I call it a victim personality, and it is somebody
okay, you brought it up. We already said she's an introvert, maybe has a victim personality. What else can you say about her? Just her spiritual situation, her knowledge of the Bible, the other things. Well, how would you characterize Clara? What's that? She's what?
She's a babe.
Okay, babe. That is immature. And what else?
She seems hurt.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you guys are good. Usually the answers come out like this. She's self-centered and, selfish and, always a complainer and she's just taking advantage of the church. Can you see how someone might start off thinking that way about her? But you're saying things like she is... What was the term you used? What did you... You said a babe. What, you said something else. You said victim. Somebody else said something else. Now, Scott says weak. Have we heard that word before? I've shown you in every way by laboring like this that you must what? Help the weak. In all your priorities as a shepherd, who do you think might be the priority of this moment? Not to run off or not to make sure she doesn't infect the group with more murmuring, right? Or create a problem for you that's bigger downstream. I don't know a better characterization of someone who's weak. Some of you might know Greek and know what her name stands for. I don't know. But it's... This is... this. So we won't go through all the others. Give me a few positive solutions that you came up with. Go ahead with your comment, though.
Well, I'd just like to make a point. It was joked about earlier that A is wrong. I don't think any of them are flat out wrong. I think as an elder, you really need to look at all of them and say, well, they're all valuable. They all have merit. The real job is how much of each to do and when to do each one.
Okay, can I make a point, just a meta point about his point? Do you know that's the world elders work in, is making judgments about things that are not wrong per se, right? And that is the only space they have to work in, is to say, here's some options. None of these are unscriptural, I don't guess. Some are probably not very loving. They might border on that kind of unscriptural, but you understand what I mean. That is the space elders work in, is that making a judgment of in sometimes ambiguous situations. And so it's the case, as you know, probably from anything you've gotten to be good at, you do develop intuitions. Oh, I've kind of seen this before. I kind of recognize that personality. You know, that reminds me of Sister So-and-so. And here's what we did, and boy, that did not work out very well. We'll try something different this time. So you have these lessons that you learn. I think that's part of just being older. That's part of the wisdom of having elders doing it. But they only work in the space of judgment, really. And so all these may seem in some ways... part of an answer, but maybe you have to build something. Let's have some good answers. What would you see? Some good ideas. And I don't have a good answer for this. I mean, I don't have the perfect answer, but...
Well,
Okay, obviously there's not a relationship been established here. And by the way, whose fault is that? No, I'm talking about the elder shepherd sheep relationship has not been established. Anybody disagree with that point? It's not in place. You've met with her a couple of times. What was that about?
Addressing an immediate need.
Right. Whose fault is that? Wait a minute. Elders don't make mistakes. Do you see what I'm getting at here? I mean, in a way, were we waiting for Clearis to figure out that she needed a stronger relationship with the elders or something? Like, what are we doing? So that suggests one step might be good. Which would be what? Okay, start with establishing. Yeah, what were you going to say? Okay, so you just got to build a foundational relationship. I'm actually suggesting something far more radical than that, but maybe we'll get to it, maybe we won't. What else? What are the good ideas? A good idea, by the way, I'm not saying, yeah, right. I couldn't exactly hear what you said. Okay, right, so there's connections here. So I'm impressed with Ephesians 4. It says, through that which every joint supplies. Joints are actually not things, they're the connection between things. So maybe all these connections can be built so that she is helped in some way. Good? Other things?
We were thinking like the elders like invite her over for dinner, and then after dinner have a discussion with her, an informal conversation. And then maybe, you know, study the Bible with her too, as far as the Bible, God's Word address.
Right, and that's part of the now, see, these guys had a much more informal approach. Are you going to comment on what he said?
No.
Oh, come on, man. I went to... Okay, I'll come back to you then. I just want to mention this, because I think we had to discover this. So we have a very, and the modern term is diverse church. We have like 6 or 7 different languages, native languages, you know, a lot of different colors, intermarried couples. So, you know, that's the way our church is. But it didn't dawn on us, because we're kind of dumb guys, that when you bring a young black woman into a room with 4 old white guys and start telling her how things are, can you guys see a problem? Right? And we kind of already see what Clearis's personality is, and on top of that, y'all see that? Maybe kind of a... But the whole, like, have her over, like, you know. In fact, just the most cordial, friendly meetings, for example, when we meet with a person who wants to become a member, you know, declare their membership in Embry Hills, we often will say, you know, bring a friend with you if you want to, or have someone else sit in there. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. And especially if they're younger. And I don't feel intimidating. I promise you I don't. But it took me a while to figure out that just the position somehow, I don't know, you know, and I think people have probably Clearis does, has a wrong view of the elders. They're not the board of directors, but she may think they are, that they have some power. After all, she did get some money. So maybe she's thinking, I got to, you know, make sure these guys, I don't know. I don't know what she's thinking, but we need to be sensitive to that kind of personality and how that would come across. Just a side point. I'm just trying to tell you there's complexities here that just keep being layered on over and over. But I think you're right, establishing the relationship is a good beginning. Does it need to be urgent, by the way, do you think? Or can we wait a while? Yes. Sure. Whatever, yeah. And a chance for them to actually mix together, right? I think that's a long-term thing. But I think a point that I hear also he's saying is it possible that some of what she's saying is actually the truth? Oh, well, I guess so. And maybe we ought to have our ears out and others just to say, you know what? And now I'm going to get back to my radical solution. I still assert that this is a problem that the elders have created, not Clearis, by sins of, that's what we say, omission. You know, and there's stuff they didn't do. And do, what do you do when you've made a bad mistake in someone's life? What were you going to say?
I was going to
do it. Elders don't apologize. Do you understand how that would undermine their authority? I'm glad you guys are laughing, because if you didn't think this was a joke, we'd be in trouble. But would it undermine their authority? Absolutely not. Right. Somebody said at the break, help them. Somebody told them there are no perfect elders. You can turn it around. They are all imperfect elders. And that means that in regard to these matters, tricky, difficult matters of judgment, difficult things, man, you're in the battle, and you're going to make mistakes, and you're going to injure someone. And I think you're going to establish, you're going to break through a lot of those barriers to say, hey, we didn't do our job here. You got to help us. And now she becomes the contributor, not the, you know, the...
I was going to say it depends on the size of the congregation. If you have 25 people, you know, the elders can mingle and get to know the people.
Right.
But if you have 300,
right,
it's hard to...
Right. So a lot of things do scale differently when you go. I was trying to say there was like 100 to 120 people, just enough so that there's a... It's a little bit outside your span of knowing everything about everybody, right? If there's only 20 members, it'd be a little different situation.
All right, let me just throw back. You said, I think you alluded earlier, you can't read people's minds.
Yep.
Okay, so you give a certain amount of attention to everybody. How are you supposed to know she needs several times? Okay, so
yeah.
Why is it, maybe it's partially your fault, but you don't.
So,
why do you say it's your fault?
So I'll say it this way. Right. How can I say it this way? So there's a sheep that wanders off and gets cut and trapped and everything. And I'll leave them there. So, you know, the question is, whose fault is it that they were left there? Well, you could say, well, they wandered off. And listen, that's what sheep do. You know what I mean? What do weak members do? What do children do? They, you know what I mean? I'm not saying that they do that righteously. I'm saying that's what they are. And so there's a sense in which who's responsible here to be the adult to actually take the lead and resolve it? This is a class weekend on spiritual leadership. We're going to see this theme over and over again, especially in husbands and wives. If you're at odds or you're in a silence match of some kind, who is responsible to take the initiative to solve that? No matter who started it or who else you can prove did the wrong thing. If you're the leader, that's part of the thing, is to be the one who takes the initiative. I'm not yelling at you. I hope that... Y'all see what I'm saying? Of course she's doing wrong things. Right? Or she's not. Of course she's not mature. In fact, let's go ahead and read the points we're supposed to get from this case, which I think we already have. I'm going to make a bad mistake here. So read at the bottom of the page there. No, it can't be stretched. We tried earlier. Note from the above, the weakest members are the greatest concern and the largest source of anxiety. Y'all see that? Page 4 right in the middle. Note from the above. There's a need for preemptive relationship building. You discovered that or knew it already. There will inevitably be from those who require the most effort, the weakest, here we are again, what? Listen, the least sense of scope and priority of what the elders do. You think she understands what the elders' job is, their role, all their workload? What she might be burdening them with? Of course not. And I'm trying to say this in a way that's not... I'm exaggerating in a sense. That's kind of her job not to know that somehow. In the role that she is as a... Y'all understand what I'm saying. They're the most questioning of your motives. They will give you the least opportunity for contact and awareness. So you just characterize a weak member. Are they the easiest to get a hold of? They return your call right away. They're always at the building so you can find them. I mean, kind of by definition, they're not. And you know what I'm saying when I say it's kind of their job. Not. I mean, by definition, that's what they... And so here are the things that, here's the box. The things that are potentially destructive of the individual, rather than being in the way of the work of the elder, what? They are the work. Listen, we talked about it a little bit at the break. The models of leadership, especially in the last century, before the last century was more military, but the last century, where are the models of leadership all come from? You go buy a book, you're going to go to the bookstore, a book about leadership, the leadership challenge, right? Or seven habits of highly effective leaders, or whatever, whatever. Where do those books come from? Who writes those books? It's the business world. Think about what kind of organizations those leaders are managing. In those organizations, what's the goal of that organization? You make money, or you grow, or get a brand, or whatever it is. It's measurable, but it's externally facing. Does everybody see that? And when you do your financial accounting and you add up all the costs that it costs to make something and all the money that you got from selling it, which side are the humans on? They're on the bad side. And if I could find a way to keep this side big and get this side little, what would I do? Of course, I would. Humans are not the product. In the church, the humans are the product. That's the odd thing. We're a factory or a hospital or an incubator. I don't know what we are. But our product is humans. Do you see that? It is the work. And you tend to think of Clearis as, you know, I've got a lot of other important things to do for the church. It's church work, right? We've got to get the teaching schedule figured out for next segment or something. And yet that is the work. Y'all see the point I'm trying to make? I was trying to illustrate that this cocoon is made for this. And if this isn't handled properly, it's going to leak out and help and hurt the rest of the thing. Look at Ezekiel 34 right quick. And then we'll just get a few points from this. This is a text that's used a lot, I think, to describe shepherds. But it describes what Jehovah's reaction is to the poor shepherding been done by Jewish leaders. We'll probably get by without this, but I'm going to skip over fathers and rulers, even though this is very important stuff. I can't skip it. I have to just show you this. Y'all know we talked about that rule word, governor word that's found there in the beginning. Oh, it didn't. Oh, sorry. See what happened. It reset the slideshow. I have to show you this. This is important. SWAT monitors on me. In fact, I think it's SWAT primary monitors. Let's try that. Nope. Go backwards. We're close, though. All right, how about now? So here are the four passages which kind of imply that elders rule. They are a positional authority, right? That means they've been appointed. There's a formal recognition that I will submit to you as an elder. And that scares people. It frightens people. They don't like it, especially in America, because we don't like to submit to anybody. We don't like to have bosses. A lot of people will not work for anybody. They want to have their own business. And they just don't like the idea that I have to submit to someone else because they might be abused in that, right? Look at these passages where that word is used. The elders who rule well, counted of double honor, especially those who what? Labor in the word and doctrine. For the scripture says, and by this interesting mix of Old and New Testament called scripture, but still, you shall not muzzle the ox when it treads out the grain, the labor. Now, in those images, who is the elder? Is it the poor ox laboring to tread out the grain or the guy that's whipping him around the track? Is it the laborer who's being paid for working all day or is it the man who's paying him to work? It's the laborer. You see, the image here is not of someone who is taking advantage. He's a laborer. They've spoken the word of God. That's the exercise of the rule. They labor among you and are over you. They admonish you and love them for their work, esteem them highly in love, and they watch out for your souls. Listen, the rule that they have, I think we sometimes think that when the guy at the front of the auditorium says the elders have set aside this time, did y'all ever say that here? I hope not. I'm not really making fun of it. I was an elder for quite a while. I never remember setting aside the time to do that. Y'all know what I mean? But we say it. Is that submitting to the elders if I give my money at the time that the elders set aside? Is that what it means to submit? Listen, if their primary job is helping save my soul as an individual sheep, what would the submission be? Showing up at 9 a.m. on Sunday, the elders set aside, what would it be? If the elder says, you know what, I'm worried about the job you have. I think it's a bad influence in your life. What would submission look like? Wait a minute, that's my private business. You see what I'm getting at here? So I want to tell you a story, because apparently you're close to that. What's the county over here where the Mennonites or Amish? Lancashire. So we were doing this session on elders. I think it was up at Wallingford. Tim Reeves or somebody, he said, you know, the Amish are right here. The elders make their members like wear these, and they can't watch TV. And they, y'all know what I'm talking about better than I do, right? They dress funny, you know, and they don't have like electricity and stuff. You know, they don't think the Bible teaches it's wrong to have electricity or to wear funny clothes. They don't think that's in the Bible. They will not try to defend that from Scripture. Why do they do that? Who tells those women they have to wear those funny bonnets? Yes, they do. And it's interesting, apparently in different sections, the elders have different rules. Imagine that. Different judgment from different elders about what these people should do. And why do they give them those restrictions? Don't you think that's it? I think if you ask them, they would say, you know what? And we might disagree with their judgment, but they would say this is to help them remain pure and to avoid the temptations of the world. Don't you think that's what they would say? They wouldn't say we just like dressing funny, or we don't like TV, or we won't ride. They don't say that. It has a spiritual purpose. I can't quite explain it, but they would probably have an idea. What do you think of that? That was the question. It was Tim Reeves asking it. What do you think of that, Marty? Elders telling people what they're supposed to wear, making them not watch TV and all that. What do you think of that? Is that the way elders are supposed to be? And he was looking at me about like you all are. Like, and? So, yeah, so I'm not here to defend or trash the Amish at all, but I'm telling you that that kind of personal life submission is not far from, I think, the pattern that we're looking at here. Now, whether they put Scripture beneath tradition or something, that's obviously not right. But I'm just so when Tim asked me that question, I just went... But I thought about it since, and I came up with this little story, and that is that there's a church and there's a young woman that just doesn't dress very modestly, right? Tight clothes, low cut, you know, things like that, kind of a consistent thing. And, you know, not she's been a Christian a while, but not, you know, just not dressing right. And so one Sunday night, she goes into the back room with the elders, and she comes out about 45 minutes later, and she's crying. And they go, and then after that, you know, every service that people can see, she's dressed, you know, kind of longer skirts and has a sweater on over some of the tight clothes and things like that. What do you think of that story? There's really two stories. I haven't really told which one I'm telling yet. One version is the elders said, she's a problem. They took her in the room, said, if you worship here, you're going to dress this way. And she said, okay, and didn't like it, and was kind of upset, maybe offended by that, but she complied. Right? That's one version of the story. Another version of the story is she felt like, with her background, she really didn't know how to dress properly. And she went to the wisest men she knew because she had no family to go to. And said, I don't know what to do. And your men, I don't know how I'm coming across. Can you help me with this? And they told her because she needed that information. Do you see a difference in those stories? Which of those is kind of a true sheep-shepherd relationship? That's the work, isn't it? Now, there's a sheep that's ready to submit, right? And that is the responsibility. And if this were a lesson to potential sheep, I would be saying, you know what? Submission is like a serious thing. And it has to do with someone who's watching in behalf of your soul. So it's real important to do it. And it's not just showing up on time and contributing at a certain time. It's going to the wisest men you know who may not be and are not omniscient and asking them questions about how better to live and avoid temptation and those kind of things. That's the relationship, I think. So look at Ezekiel 34. We'll just, right quick. There are four things in the text, and they're just very clear. Look at this. God says, I will search for my sheep and seek them out. I'm in chapter 34, verse 11. And seek them out as a shepherd seeks out his flock on the day he is scattered. Sorry, I'm going to start. As a shepherd seeks out his flock on the day he is among his scattered sheep, so I will seek out my sheep and deliver them from all the places where they were scattered on a dark and cloudy day. That means things are not going well in your life. Is there somebody going to come find me when I don't really know the way out? And maybe I'm lost and don't know it, or maybe I'm lost and I know it and I have no idea what the way home is. I don't have any idea. I just don't know. Who will find me? That's what the shepherd's job is. I will bring them out from the peoples and gather them from their country, bring them to their own land. I will feed them on the mountains of Israel and the valleys and all the inhabitants and places of the country. Go to verse 28. They'll no longer be a prey. They'll dwell safely. No one will make them a prey. Do you see that that shepherds provide a safe place where a person can ask those questions, or a person can have a place where they don't suffer from temptation around them? So it's a safe environment for them where they feel loved and protected. Number 14, verse 14, I'll feed them. Verse 16, I'll bind up the broken and strengthen that was sick. And I think we're back to Acts 20 again. I've told you, by laboring every way, you must help the weak, the broken, the sick, and there's somebody there to help heal. That's the heart of what a shepherd does. And I think all those other things are just concentric circles of support around that core task, which is to help a sheep grow up to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. I think that's the message, all right? So one last little point. How can you prepare yourself for that? Only elders can do this kind of work, right? I'll tell you the truth. There are some members and some Christians that are better at reaching those. We have one brother who's a deacon. I think he'll be an elder very soon. But for many years, he said, I'm not an elder, but I'm a sheepdog. And that's kind of true. He finds people that we can't find, and he goes and talks to them, and he often will do the job that we're not able to do or not getting to if we are. So I think everyone here can think about that job of seeking someone out, bringing to a place where they feel secure and enfolded and befriended and protected and loved. Teach them, feed them, make them grow, give them nourishment, give them an alternative to what the world is feeding them, and their lives will be messed up. I forget who said this. If the problem with catching fish is you have to clean them or something like that, right? There's scars and there's brokenness that has to be kind of accommodated. And you know, as parents, we're able to do that with a baby that can't do anything, just screams all the time. We'll talk some more about that tomorrow. That same patience and stuff should be exercised toward God's laws. I've gone too long tonight. I'm finished with that. You want to? Yes.
I have one question. I think that probably your friend is such the type of person you described here. It just seems like, I don't know, it's a generation of what you're teaching. As you said, America, nobody likes to be told what to do. Right? And sometimes, even when we use diplomacy, we can get a really bad reaction. Saying we just have to kind of continue to work at making it more powerful.
Yes. Yes. So we're making up all this stuff about Clayara, some of which there's evidence for. Yeah, that's right. And you know, this case didn't come out of the air, but I will say this, Here's what we don't know, and I think since I don't know the future and I'm free to make one up until I know differently, why don't I make up this future? You know what? She is hurting. And something bad's happened to her where she's been before. And she needs some place that really loves her and has her best interest at heart and values what's good about her and tells her she's worth something, because all her life everybody said you're not worth it. You can't keep an income. You can't make all your bills. You know what I'm saying? Let's make that story up. If that were true, does it kind of fit the case here? Why don't we work with that one until we find out differently? And just go and talk to her and say, you know what? We think you could really be valuable here. You know, you have some skills perhaps we don't know about. We could help with that. I don't know what. You imagine the conversation where it's not about slamming her. It's finding or bringing her back, putting her in a safe place, giving her strength by the teaching that's done, and find out what her scars are, because I bet you there are some. That's been the most frightening thing to me, is to get to know people and learn what happened to them when they were 17 years old or something. That kind of informs everything. It's like, oh, I get it. That almost explains everything. You know what I mean? Something like that. There are scars that you might...
I wondered if the complaints about noisy children and preaching too long is only a symptom.
Sure. I think it's all symptoms, right? That's right.
Just not having the love that she's getting. We kind of thought, well, if we just show love for her, that is not only the elders, but all the members.
That's right.
These things are clear up on her own.
I could go on and on. There's the chapter in Luke, which is love. It's chapter 9. The paragraphs get real short right after the transfiguration. If you read those stories, it's the failure to heal the boy. It was they didn't understand Jesus said he's going to go to Jerusalem. They were going to bring fire down on the Samaritans. They arguing over who the greatest was. It was an unknown miracle worker. Y'all know that chapter? One after another, little vignettes of disciples. What? These are not the enemies. These are like the apostles. And what are they doing? These are Jesus-trained people. They've been with him for 2 years at this point. So I'm just, you know, at one point Jesus turns, how long shall I bear with you, is one of the things he says in that. But did Jesus deal with those imperfections with great patience? I'm telling you, we are surrounded by imperfect brethren who are going to surprise us and disappoint us. That's the world where then Jesus dealt with that. He didn't throw them away. He just taught them when he could, and he just kept telling them later because they didn't understand. I just think that we need to see, if we see the rest of the world as we understand ourselves to be imperfect, we'll be a lot more tolerant of that. Okay, and you that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak. Yeah.
Yep. One more comment about the Amish vision. They do think that they're helping people who are holy. Pharisees also are.
Right.
The elders in Mark 7 have special rules to make sure.
Right.
Et cetera, et cetera. And Jesus' response to them was, their worship was vain because they've gone beyond the Word of God.
Right.
So the Word of God has to be the standard, not what the elders make up to be the Word of God. But I really appreciate the point that the shepherds need to be involved in people's lives personally. And we need to be submissive to the wise men that we ask.
So that's the point. So I'm going to tell one other story. And this will sound like... So I think the mass passing of ordinances about what you have to wear is not the point. It's an individual thing. But you could see in the case of that story, the second version of the story, the elders are probably telling the girl, you know, with your shape, you probably should wear this or that. You know what I mean? It's kind of a tailored thing. And it's welcome that, yeah. And so, but it's tailored to that situation. But if she didn't do that, that would be not submissive. I think if she said, I'm not going to do that, I'm just not, that's not submitting. And you say, well, it was just a matter of judgment. That's their space. That's the one they work in. There's no other space to work in but the matter of judgment. I'll give you another situation. And we've had several that are kind of analogous to this. We had a brother who was having trouble getting drunk all the time. And he was using vodka because it didn't have a smell. Who knew? I had no idea. But I learned all that. Things you don't want to learn, but you do. Right? But his family was finding the empty bottles and stuff. And And he had a job where, you know, if he, not that this is necessarily all that relevant, it's wrong, never mind, but where if he were discovered to have, be an alcoholic, he would be disqualified from his job. It had to do with airplanes and safety things, okay? So, you know, guess what? He repented every time we found out about it. Which I would too, right? And I actually believe he thought he was finished, but he wasn't, of course. You see what I mean? And so it's kind of like week after week we're saying, you know, you have to stop this. I am. I did. I haven't had since last week, you know. And we finally said something like this. If you don't check into a treatment center by Friday, we're going to withdraw from you. Now, if I've made a new law that's not in the Bible, you see what I'm getting at. Now, it's tailored to that specific situation. It's a matter of judgment. Why Friday and not Thursday or Saturday? And why a treatment program and not some other thing? I don't know, but it's almost like you have to say, what are the precursor behaviors? We've got to address this as an emergency situation. And we have to pull it into the realm of yes or no, not I'll do better. Does that make sense? Others, how do you ever actually take a congregational action? I didn't mean to get all these details, but this is an example, I think, of the way you tailor the judgment. It's not exactly a rebuttal, but I'm just saying that, yes, it is a matter of judgment. Of course it is. That's the only space they have to work in. But it does reflect their submission or not to,
right, to do it.
Right, right.
There's judgment involved where to draw the line.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. But over and over, we've seen situations where there's a kind of continuing, a chronic problem that a member has, and it really is reflecting in their life. It's kind of known by the group, but you know, it just, oh, how do you ever really deal with that, you know? And so here's a person, they have other habits you can imagine, but they keep doing that and they keep repenting every time they're found out. How do you ever get that to the place where you say, well, we're going to have to withdraw from you because you're continuing in this sin? But they say, no, I didn't. I repented yesterday. You know what I mean? And the answer is, I think you have to move it into the another realm of a more concrete action, which is a precursor. This is only my opinion. Maybe I'm stretching the issue. I shouldn't put this on tape. But that's just the one thought about how you have to deal with, I think, some continuing things, chronic things, for the good of the sheep, that's all it is. And I think you're right. I think the one big difference is the tailoring to each individual situation. All right, I'm finished.